Hey guys, welcome to the Lifetime Body Podcast. You are here today with your hosts, John Zombro and PK. It's episode 70. Good morning, PK.
Good morning. How are you?
I am great. And I'm great because today's title that we're going to chop up, actually we're going to demystify movement, and we're going to look at the ideal amount of activity and exercise that is indicative of optimal health and longevity.
I can't wait to hear more. Tell me what we're going to get into today.
Well, before we do that, so the audience knows what we're going to get into, I would like to share what's been going on, a couple things that are just occurring to me recently. And one of the things was one of the athletes that I coach just had a phenomenal experience. He had a phenomenal performance in an Ironman triathlon on Sunday. That was the event in Mont Tremblant in Quebec. And he actually performed near where I thought he was going to, but that was at a level that was far beyond what he expected. And so, you know, that's a celebration and we're loving that. But one of the things that he and I were talking about was how he was so happy that he had gone through the training process, avoided getting injured, preserved his health, and got his performance. And that's really what this stuff is all about. And just a great example there that, you know, I didn't have much of a role in it, really. You know, I got to live vicariously and enjoy his experience, but he did the work and he intelligently attacked the day, and it was just a huge success.
And he crushed.
Full crush.
So was it a significant sort of improvement in his performance over previous previous races?
Yes, because this was his first Ironman. He'd done several Olympic distance events and a half Ironman in his build up to this, but this was kind of a bucket list item, a lifetime goal. And and he really did well. He was competitive in his age group, and that, for a first timer, generally a first timer, the only thing you want to focus on is finishing in one piece. But I was watching the live feed, and he came across the line, you know, with a fist pump and a smile, and his form, he looked good. He didn't look, like some people did or do, and kudos.
Absolutely. Well, and I mean, you know, an Ironman level with all the different disciplines that it's there's mental, there's nutrition, there's obviously rest and tapering before. So that's a hell of an achievement for sure.
Yeah, it's just fun. And I think that, you know, it kind of puts a cap, even though summer's not really over yet. It's just, gosh, you know, this is really one of the things that, makes a summer great. And I've got some reports on some other athletes that'll be coming in with their events. And in fact, this guy, and I don't know whether he wants to use an alias or not. We haven't figured that out, but he's going to come on the show and he's going to talk about, you know, his journey and, this whole idea of training and balancing health and performance, and indeed that it's a possibility. And there's a lot of messaging out there that you can't have health and longevity and performance. You know, those things are, you know, sometimes perceived to be inconsistent. But I do think there is a way. It's the highest level of attainment, but it can be done. And so, we'll dig into that in another show. But thank you for letting me go on. But this mind-boggling conundrum of how much movement we need. I see this as a bit of controversy and certainly a source of confusion for so many.
And that's why we're digging in this today. Like, we're demystifying movement. And again, the title is The Ideal Amount of Activity and Exercise for Health, Longevity, and dare I say performance. So when you say mind-boggling, is this something that you're consistently getting where they're saying, Coach Jay-Z, how much do I move? Or is it just the conversation in health and wellness about movement is so divisive? I mean, why is it so mind-boggling?
Yeah, whether it's a person who is saying, I know I need to move more for my health and for my longevity, I'm just not sure how much. Or I visited my healthcare provider of any type, and he or she recommended that I move more. So what does that mean? And how do I do it? I think that's where what I see is I see a lot of people who have some confusion and frustration over that. And so our real mission, if there is one today, is to clarify and to make some sense and say, okay, here is the prescription based on research that most people can do, and it's easily attained and incredibly effective.
Right. Okay. So I think that I'm remembering a conversation that we had where a client was recommended by a doctor saying, you need to move more. And the client said, the person said, how much more? And the doctor's like, well, I don't know. So there's this kind of general idea towards moving more, but that's where the sort of the advice ends. And so today we're going to pick it up from there and say, this is the blueprint for how to get it done and why.
Yeah, let's get ready to break it down into a simple recipe for movement. And so in doing that, I have this to offer.
Spoon Man, come together with your hands, save me. I'm together with your plans, save me.
When that song came out, gosh, I think it was early 94, that was Soundgarden, Spoon Man, with the late, great Chris Cornell on lead vocals, and that great walk down on guitar that Kim Thayil was doing. But anyway, that song moved me, and it had so much power, and I think there's a tribute to those guys for doing that. And also, I thought, well, since we're talking about demystifying movement, how about starting with a moving song?
John, I tell you there, setting the stage, if you will, for today's conversation, deep, but also accessible. I love it.
Yeah. Okay. So let's define movement beyond Spoon Man. And what we're going to say, you know, because Spoon Man, if you've ever seen that video, hey, folks, definitely watch it. It's really cool because there was a Seattle street artist back in the day when they were filming that. I think his title was Artist the Spoon Man. And the guy's amazing. You know, he's kind of dancing around and playing, playing spoons. And he's got a set of them making some great music. But you got to see it to believe it, because there's another definition of movement. But our definition here at the Lifetime Body, and this is kind of a system that I've developed and used for a long time, is how do you make movement understandable? Well, that there are two categories. There is the category of activity, or under the umbrella of movement, we have activity, and I like to call that general daily activity, and then we have exercise. And so those are the two types of movement that we all do as humans, or should, and we can describe those a little bit before we get into other details.
Absolutely. Yeah, break it down for me. Describe them.
So activity, or GDA, general daily activity, is really all the things that you do in your ADLs, or activities of daily living. So you may brush your teeth, mop the floor, walk the dog, go to the mailbox, do yard work, carry the groceries in. We can keep on going and make this great list, but I think everybody understands that those are our activities. And before you go on
from that, something that, I mean, obviously I've been absorbing these concepts for a while now. I think about GDA like the those daily activities that your fitness tracker will pick up when, like a day when you're mowing the lawn and you're making a run to the groceries and you look down and you've got, 7,000 steps and you've just gone about your day. That's the kind of stuff that is encapsulated by, activity in GDA. So that might be one way that if you're sort of thinking about, just your general activity, that's one way that I think about it. I don't know if that jives with what your thoughts are, John.
Totally. Those devices or apps capture your, they're really depending on, which device you're talking about and what you're wearing or using. They're capturing all your movement. So they're even capturing your exercise tallies as well. But they're converting it into kind of like, an activity measure. Mm-hmm. And so a couple things to say about GDA, or general daily activity. It's really the thing that keeps our metabolisms idling along and our circulation moving, not stalling. And so it's really, we want to move often throughout the day. And that's really how I think we want to view activity, as opposed to say, well, I can sit on the couch or at my desk all day long, and then I'll offset it by, you know, taking a walk. Well, the research shows that's not actually as good, because those powerful effects of the stasis or stationary positions are broken up better by a few minutes here, a few minutes there. And a lot of clients I find, I'll notice that they find this relieving. So you're telling me I don't have to budget the time or the energy to take an hour walk, and that it's actually better for my circulation and in some ways long-term health to just do a few minutes here and there, so I can easily fit it in through the day. And I say, yeah. And they're saying, oh, great. I'll give you that. And I say, well, don't give it to me. You're giving it to yourself. You're giving yourself the benefits of, you know, the gift of health and fitness and longevity.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. So that's activity. We're going to dive a little deeper in a minute, but exercise, how does it differ from activity?
Yeah. So exercise is sort of like the official training that we do for a specific goal, you know, to improve endurance, strength, mobility, conditioning, you know, those types of things. We typically dress out for it. In other words, we put on exercise clothes and, you know, we view it as a session. So that's how you can separate the two. And, you know, one argument is that, gosh, if you are active enough and you have a lot of activity in your day and some of it's vigorous and, you know, you're doing all sorts of things, you're a lumberjack or a farmer, there's a reasonable argument to be made. You might not need much exercise at all. However, exercise has specific benefits that we can manipulate. So we can maintain joint mobility, posture, lean body mass, muscle strength and development in different areas of the body, aerobic conditioning, the ability to measure and output. So, I think we need both. I know we need both. And so we want to view, okay, you get your activity, you keep moving, that helps your body to stay healthy and viable. But you do your exercise for your specific fitness, that not only can that relate to your sports goals, but it also is critical as we move through the lifespan, that we don't lose important aspects of human function.
I love it. I love it. Well, I want to keep learning more.
So what you're saying is, feel the rhythm with your hands. Steal the rhythm while you can, Spoon Man.
I was saying that in not so many words, and you were able to articulate.
I felt it. You had the rhythm, you know. So okay, so let's now break out general daily activity and look at kind of some literature based things. And so this GDA, some of the literature that kind of wraps around those trackers, those activity trackers, where maybe you're looking at 10,000 steps, are related. They have some relationship to data that's out there. So the first thing is, you know, people say, well, where did the 10,000 steps come from? Was there a definitive study done that showed that was the marker? No, actually, 10,000 steps was an arbitrary figure that a Japanese pedometer company a few decades ago had come up with, and it just sort of stuck. And so that was like, oh, okay, everybody needs 10,000 steps per day. However, more recently, some of the remnant populations of hunter-gatherers that are still, existing on the planet have been studied, and it turns out that they get about on average, about 10,000 steps per day. It's slightly greater for males, slightly less for females in the roles that they have. But if you start doing some math on it and you look at, how far is 10,000 steps? It's about 5 miles. So, you know, that depends on, you know, stride length, of course, sure. And also stride rate, you know. So depending on if it's a little bit more than a casual walking speed, it's about 90 minutes of activity per day. And I would just say that it's 90 minutes of walking equivalent. So in other words, lifting, pushing, pulling, carrying, you know, those things are also activity. And so you don't necessarily always have to walk 5 miles in total to get the, 10,000 step equivalent.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So that's kind of a validation for, we need activity. It needs to be random throughout the day. And maybe as much as 90 minutes of it would be really good. However, you know, not too long ago, there was a study published in The Lancet, that's the British medical journal, that really showed, you know, you get most of the benefits at 60 minutes. So that's kind of a thing that I've noticed with a lot of folks is, man, you know, 90 is just, it's hard to get around that, but 60 is only an hour. And so, yeah, and so you can create those wins and get that hour a day. And the Lancet study that I'm referencing, which is actually in the... it's linked in the blog post of this week with the same title as this show, if you'd like to study more deeply. 1 hour of activity through a day has some effects of offsetting the increased or earlier death risk that prolonged sitting has been proven to cause.
Interesting. That's... Yeah, early death onset. It's so ominous, but obviously, you know, it's a major consideration in our modern lives.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard, you know, there's all sorts of funny, well, maybe they're not even funny, but, you know, just quips that folks will say, like, you sit, you die, that kind of thing. And sitting's the new smoking. Again, we have to kind of look at these things in context. You know, some amount of sitting is not necessarily going to be deleterious to your health, but we do have to watch out for too much of it and for too long of a period. So here's the thing. To keep things from getting confusing, we just need to get 60 minutes of cumulative general activity throughout a day. It's non-negotiable. We need it every day, and that's what we should do. Now, if we were all hunter-gatherers or lumberjacks or, you know, some of, you know, really super active people, we're doing 90-plus minutes and some of it's vigorous, we might say that's all you need, but us modern folks can be strategic. We can get those activity requirements in, and then we can move on to the specific benefits that exercise provides.
Right. And John, I what I've learned about this, about the GDA in my own life, is that if I'm not paying attention to it, like, you know, let's say it's a winter Sunday or something like that, when I'm just feeling super lazy, it's kind of amazing when you think about when you're actually, you know, you get to the end of the day and you've got like 900 steps. And I think that, which is clearly not enough. It's just minimal activity. It's not nearly what you're saying here, but I do think it's kind of, however you can get a benchmark, whether you're just sort of, you know, generally writing down how much you're moving throughout the day, or you do have one of the trackers or it's on your phone or something like that. I think that even just taking a week and just being aware of it it was very illuminating for me, just for how some days I've moved so little without even really connecting the dots.
Yeah. And this is even kind of a great message, not just for folks who want to stay, you know, viable and circulating and healthy, but for a lot of athletes, particularly some of the ones that I'm working with, we really emphasize getting this general activity in and some light movement in addition to their training, because it does help speed recovery and increase fitness gains by that whole, again, circulation and health mechanism.
Right. So it's a rest day, you know, it's deliberately a rest day, but it still means that you want to get that 60 minutes of GDA to keep the blood flowing, to keep all of the, you know, internal circulatory, everything. I don't know all the terms, but just firing so things don't lie dormant to speed in the recovery. So it's kind of like an active rest, if you know.
Yeah, so true. And I think we're starting to see that more well-supported in the literature. So we can kind of separate it out. It's like, okay, you know, we all get this activity. But now, what are they talking about with exercise?
Mm-hmm. Take me there.
Okay, so first of all, who's they? You know, it's like, well, we've got the Department of Health and Human Services, the World Health Organization, American Heart Association, American Medical Association, American College of Sports Medicine. So basically all of these organizations or institutions have adopted the 2018 guidelines, which are essentially saying that adults need approximately 180 minutes a week of exercise.
Okay. And they're all sort of universally, generally in agreement on that number?
Yeah. And so here's where, you know, we have to, you know, so kind of break that down a little bit. So, okay. So, what they're, and the recommendations, you can look them up in any of those organizations, they're all consistent. 150 minutes of easy to moderate aerobic exercise. So in other words, that's that LISS or low intensity steady state, or sometimes the thing that you and I call the low slow cardio mojo, you know, the crock pot form of training.
Yes.
So yeah, but if a person does some vigorous exercise, which might be more like the high intensity interval training or the HIIT stuff, you know, that the return on investment can be higher for those within those for whom it's safe to do. So you might be able to cut your aerobic exercise demands possibly in half, so that, you know, if you're doing a few HIIT sessions per week, it's only 75-ish minutes total based on these guidelines. So things get a little bit gray because they're not really clear in defining, okay, you know, what's easy, what's vigorous, you know, how do we quantify that? How does it fit for each person? But my whole message is, hey, you know, generally try to get most of that 150 minutes, have most of it be easy, intersperse a bit of hard, and the data definitely supports that.
Got it. Got it. Okay. I mean, while it's not, you know, crystal clear, there's a little either or, like, you know, it's 150 for easy, moderate, and then half of that if you're going hard. So I do think that there is a common sense sort of path to see that clearly.
Yeah. And I would say that there's quite a bit of good information to suggest that we benefit from both, you know. So again,
right,
how one designs programming, you know, whether doing it yourself or with your coach, you know, it depends on your goals, your health status, all those things. But through a year, we want to see humans getting some easy aerobics and getting some high intensity. I wouldn't recommend doing only one all the time. You know, that's not a natural pattern, first of all, but it also will compromise some of the potential gains in the systems because you're not addressing all the issues.
Got it. Okay. Makes sense. Any other things in regard to just kind of high level looking at exercise?
Yeah, the recommendation for us adults, you know, so they differ slightly for kids versus adults, and then the kind of older adults, and that's not super clearly defined either, is an additional 30 minutes of gym type training, so strength training, and also training that works on balance, mobility, agility, some of the things that we need to preserve, you know, as we move through this journey called LIFE.
Okay, so that, I mean, that's pretty straightforward. For adults, 30 minutes of that, you know, that type of training.
Yeah, and this level of exercise has a very strong correlation in you know, in many observational studies with health, lifespan, functional capacities preserved, and reported quality of life. So, you know, doing just these 3 hours of exercise gives you this just more capable, durable beast of a human body that that friggin' works and does stuff, you know, as opposed to not, which is bummer.
Yeah, and I do think an important just kind of connection to that is, like, it does stuff and it feels like you can do stuff. Not only can you, but you've got that capability versus, you know, the absence of that, where you actually feel the incapacity.
Yeah, it's like Spoon Man. Okay, I don't know why I keep hitting that, but if we say, well, how do you break it down even further? So
sure.
You know, if we use the Lifetime Body System of exercise breakdown, and I'm using kind of what I would call the modified or simplified version that only has four components as opposed to five. The first thing I'm going to say with exercise training is what we're going to talk about are, you know, as we go through this, the minimums, the bare minimums that every person needs to do, you know, again, safely with good coaching and guidance to get maximum health benefits. Now, we have athletes that do lots more exercise training than the minimums we're putting out here. And the art form with that is, how much can we inject into them and they can absorb and continue to make, you know, progress and fitness adaptations without compromising health. So that's sort of a different topic that I want to talk about in another show maybe. But for right now, okay, we've got these four categories of exercise that we described earlier, and I'm just going to make them simpler. So we've got O2, which is aerobic, or LISS. That's one category. Then we've got MOSTA. So that's that MOSTA, mobility-stability training. And it's all those things that work on, posture, flexibility, coordination, oftentimes part of warm-up and cool-downs, priming, cueing, movement, quality enhancement. So there's that. So we've got aerobic and we've got MOSTA. Now we have the big R, and the big R is resistance. And so that's, strength training or weight training. It can be body weight or, using machines or rubber bands or whatever, but it's that stuff that we work against the load and we build our muscles and connective tissues. And then the last category is the HIIT. And so that's high intensity interval training. So what I did in this example, I like to be a little bit nitpicky and separate out interval training and in kind of the upper ends of the aerobic zone from sprinting, which is, higher output for shorter times with really, really long rest periods. So, but technically sprinting can be a part of HIIT. So basically it's just, interval training where you go hard for a bit and then you rest a bit and you repeat a few times. And those are the four categories. So we've got aerobic, MOSTA, resistance, and HIIT.
Got it. Okay. So then what we're going to do now is we're going to take these, the basic categories and put it into like a sort of a program, right?
Spoon Man. Yeah, we are. Okay. So come together with y'all. Okay. Designing an exercise program or a workout routine. So, a workout routine would be like, I'm not sure I'm crazy about the word routine, because to me that doesn't sound like it's dynamic enough to adapt to the undulating beast. But okay, fine. There's your workout and maybe it's got some flexibility, but then it's overlaid by this program. What's my program, And so we're going to talk about that. Here's an example. A person who has to or is trying to get their 180 minutes or 3 hours of exercise total might do 3 30-minute sessions of aerobic exercise. So that would be O2, 3 times 30. So that's going to make 90 minutes total, half of their weekly volume. And that's in that easy category. And the studies are very supportive that that's getting near a sweet spot where, 30 is a little bit better than 20. But 60 is not much better than 30, that kind of thinking. So we're always trying to be evidence-based with these recommendations.
Got it. Okay, I like that. So 3 times a week, I'm getting 30 minutes of that long, low, and slow aerobic. Okay, I'm making a little list here. So where do I go?
Well, you could do these in any order, sure. But about MOSTA, and again, that's my acronym. It's just easy to say MOSTA instead of saying mobility, stability, MOSTA. So I would say one way to break that up is to do 5 10-minute sessions in a week. So there you go. You've just got, 5 days of the week, you've got 10 minutes of certain things that you might do. That's one model. It would even be better if it was 7 times 7 minutes. That's coming out to 49. Okay, so we'll sacrifice a minute there. But the idea that the body, and particularly like the neuromuscular system and the collagen tissues, like that frequent reminder of of what their job is, where they need to be in space, and how they need to move and integrate. So that's true. Now, having said that, I would also say that it depends on how often a person wants to work out. So as we go through the rest of this, you can see that, you could put some of these things together and just do 3 60-minute workouts in a week. Like, you have like your gym days or something. That's fine. That's going to work. Or you might say, okay, I've got a few bits of equipment in the garage or whatever, and I'm just going to do 30 minutes a day because I know I can hit that. So it'd be 6 times 30, whatever, as far as the total session goes. But we've got the 3 times 30 or 90 minutes of aerobics. We've got the 50 minutes or so of this MOSTA. Now we get into, what does the literature say about resistance training or strength training? And so data's fairly good that there are quite a few benefits in training twice a week. So training the whole body or every muscle group, whether we're trying to isolate muscles or movements twice a week. Maybe there's not quite enough data yet to say that three is better than two, because some of that depends on how hard a person works and can they recover and absorb three workouts versus two. But two is definitely better than one. So we've got two resistance training sessions in a week for 15 minutes each. Now, sometimes I like to talk about time under load with exercise, and that would be where you're only counting up like the time that you're lifting the weights, not the rests in between each set. But, you know, again, there's another way of looking at it. It's just to say, gosh, you know, in a 15-minute session, so you're counting both, you know, lifts and rests, you can get a lot done. And it only has to be that much. Sure, again, for athletic or bodybuilding goals, do people do lots more than this? Yes. But you can get most of your, health and longevity benefits of resistance training at 2 times 15 minutes per week.
Got it. So we're adding that up. So that's 30 minutes of resistance training. And I like the sort of distinction you make there. You can look at it as time, you know, time under load, or just 15 minutes total, including the rest. Either one will get you there under, you know, this program.
Yeah, it doesn't take too much stimulus, and that's kind of the message. And then the last thing gets even briefer with HIIT. You know, and if our goals are those little extra, you know, health benefits that we can get from high intensity interval training, you only need to do one workout a week, and probably, you know, that could be variable. But in this example, I would say do 10 minutes, and that would be a session where, you know, you're doing 5 repetitions or 5 times 30 seconds hard, 90 seconds easy. So you're really, you know, your time under load there, 5 times 30 seconds, you know, would only be 2.5 minutes because you have those rest periods. But nonetheless, just 10 minutes. And that could be like, say, a person's on a bike and, you know, they just might crank on the resistance and pedal hard for 30 seconds. And then they lighten up and just, you know, pedal really easy for 90 seconds. And then that clock will come around to the 2-minute mark, go again, times 4 more.
I love it. I think that that's, you just laid it out so clearly. That seems, that takes a kind of like those general recommendations by all those, you know, alphabet soup organizations that we talked about under exercise, and puts it into like a real actionable sort of practical way to apply exercise on a week to week basis.
Yeah. It's like, come together with your hand. Oh, there we go. I mean, that's going to happen today, but, If I do this, if I say, okay, now just sum it up, you know, bring it all together. As you say, take me home. Now, okay. the recipe or the prescription for movement based on research is this. We need to have, as these durable human beasts that we're all trying to be, we need to have a total of 10 hours of movement per week. Mm-hmm. When we look at those areas that we just discussed, you need 7 hours of GDA. That's not gosh darned activity. That's general daily activity, or more if you can get it. But get an hour every day. And unless you're sick, you know, it's really important to get the full hour every day. You can't really bank it by doing 5 hours one day and then skip the next four. You know, the health benefits aren't there for doing it that way. So 10 hours per week of movement, 7 hours GDA. And now we're back at 3 hours of exercise, as we just went over. Mm-hmm. And that could be, you know, really random, or it could be 3 times an hour, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, or Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, or it could be 6 times 30 minutes, you know, Monday through Saturday, Sunday off, whatever. I mean, we can even talk about, maybe we should, you know, very briefly, some examples of like how we talked about those recipes of these are the kinds of movement, or excuse me, the kinds of exercise you need, and here's the amount of time. Well, okay, what would an hour gym session look like if that's the case? So here's, you know, okay, you go to the gym and, oh, well, I think I'm going to do 2 examples. So the first one would be, let's just, jump on the bike or the treadmill and, you know, and do the low, slow cardio mojo for 30 minutes. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's sort of giving you a general warm up so that your body's ready to do some things. And so, oh, okay, maybe after that, I'm going to hit my resistance. So got 30 minutes. Now I'm going to go yeah, for 15 minutes on the weights. You know, maybe there's machines or weights and you got, you know, that program, bang that out. There's 45 minutes. So then we're like, oh, I probably can get my hit. And if I use that 10-minute example, you know, maybe that one's done with calisthenics. And so it's like, you know, cranking out burpees for 30 seconds and then walking around the gym for 90. And then you're back doing, you know, another, you know, jumping jacks or something like that. Okay. And then at the very end, you know, there's a few minutes left over for some, you know, some stretching work. And that's a workout that's right around an hour that uses all those things.
Perfect. Absolutely.
I'll give you one more example just because, you know, people might say, well, my, you know, I like to do it differently. So what if you came into the gym and you said, I'm going to start out, I'm going to do a bit more of this MOSTA business. I'm really going to work on, you know, some corrective and priming motions. I've got a few issues I'm trying to tune up kind of post rehab. Okay. So they do that first and maybe they do it for, you know, a full 10 or even a couple more minutes. And so their body's all, you know, kind of lubed up and grooving. And then they're like, well, you know, my priority is the strength today. So they're going to lift and might only be still a 15 or 20 minute routine or could be a bit longer, but you know, they're getting that prioritized. Then it could be a quick exposure to hit and then a long coasting cool down to finish out the hour. And that's not a bad way of doing it either. Those are both examples of the hour workout in the gym. And so obviously you could split that stuff up and do half one day, half the next on a 6 day model. But again, there's hope, there's a way. And you know, you can do it in a phone booth with one kettlebell. I mean, there's a way to train where you don't have to have a ton of space or equipment or cost.
Absolutely. And I like the way that you kind of sliced and diced and worked those into an hour gym sesh. And I do think that the overall, you know, the components are there for you to fit into your life, however, you know, works best with your schedule or your personal inclination. You like a lot of little shorter workouts, it works. You like a handful of longer workouts, it works as well.
Yeah, and if you slice and dice, you have to have a knife. But if you're Spoon Man, you got to do that a little differently.
You got to scoop it, huh?
Yeah, and I would say this, you know, it's always a good idea to, when we're talking about movement and activity and exercise, hey, make sure that you have, you know, adequate or appropriate medical clearance to participate in these things. And you have, you know, you visited with your healthcare provider and you've got a green light and all the, you know, all the safety things have been checked off.
Absolutely. That's just common sense, but still, this is, we do discuss that here.
Yeah. And this being the Lifetime Body, where, you know, we do have the science meeting common sense. So we, you know, we definitely want our exercise to be safe and fun and creative, and it has to fit your body, you know? So how you manipulate and design those programs and work with those variables, it's gotta be right. It's gotta feel good to your beast. Get results. What are you training for? Whatever that is, they all can be achieved if, you know, if we do this intelligently enough. Have some fun, enjoy it, celebrate motion. It doesn't have to be drudgery. There's always a way to find the fit for each person and avoid injury. And I just say that that's kind of what I'm doing in my work. And we've talked about this before, but like, I try to take those principles of biomechanics and physical therapy and movement correction and apply those to my clients' programs so that, you know, they're addressing problems that they may have and avoiding creating them. At the very same time, then we take kind of the extensive body of knowledge that exists in exercise physiology and athletic training, and we can apply programs that actually use the things that are proven by science to get outstanding results.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Well, and then it takes us right all the way back to, you know, your client who crushed his Ironman. I mean, that's exactly what you're describing there in a practical application.
Yeah, it's so fun because, you know, I like seeing people succeed. In fact, I was talking the other day, we had a show, kind of a look back. I had visited with Dr. Darren Schmidt, who's the director of the Nutritional Healing Center of Ann Arbor. And, you know, he and I were talking about, you know, mechanisms of disease and the power of nutrition and, you know, healing the body and, you know, and all those kinds of things. And it, it was really interesting because I just, you know, asked him a few questions off the top of my head and say, well, we're talking about health, you know, what's the value of relationships? And, you know, he paused for a moment and he was kind of quiet. And then he said, there are people in this world who don't want you to be happy, healthy, and successful. And you need to abolish those relationships and instead surround yourself with people who support you, love you, care for you, and give, you know, give you wings, bring you up. And we need to do that for everybody else. So that was what he had mentioned. But, you know, that's the, I think that's the thing is, man, it's really an uplift when I get to do that with someone and then they have, you know, we're just creating this, you know, tsunami of positivity. And there's, it's just, that's how I want to live my life. And I just love seeing other people catch the bug.
Absolutely. Well, it's infectious too. I can hear it in your voice.
It's an infectious, like, Spoon Man, come together with y'all. All right. So finishing up, I'll introduce a review of the week that we had and maybe leave it to PK to read. So this one came in, as they often do, on Apple Podcasts, you know, formerly iTunes. And this is 5 stars from KJ's Grandpa.
And this person wrote, the Lifetime Body projects, plans, and ideas are always thoroughly researched and creatively constructed. As a reader of Project Jacked, I saw firsthand how well-designed the TLB programming is, making it easy to succeed in health, fitness, and performance. That is a hell of a review at 5 stars, and we appreciate it.
It's a roundhouse kick. Thanks, man. So, you know, an upcoming show, this is preview time. It's coming. We've been hinting about it. Operation Bootay Jackus Maximus. Okay, it's Operation Booty Jack. And so some more tidbits. Really what we're looking at in this program are what the EMG, that's electromyography, and MRI, magnetic resonance imaging, I think everybody knows that term, studies prove to be the best way to build your backside. So we look at the exercises that have been shown to maximally recruit and develop cross-sectional density in the gluteal muscles, how to do it safely and effectively, all laid out simply.
Man, I tell you, since you planted the seed, I have been personally thinking about, you know, how and why to build my own caboose. So it's just, it's going to be laid out there for anyone and everyone to put into action.
Yeah. And there are three, I think there are three levels of folks, you know, that this speaks to. And these three levels probably encompass everyone. But, you know, the first level is, you know, you hear it all the time, you know, a person will say, well, gosh, you know, my coach or my trainers, or I even think myself, I'm not recruiting my glutes, or, you know, I'm not extending fully through the hip, or, you know, I'm lacking performance in some activity, or even, you know, it can be related to vertical jump or other things. So those are like the people that say, I want to build this to have a little more power there. Yep. Okay. Mm-hmm. You know, Operation Booty Jack does that. Then you have, you know, another group of people say, you know, I want a certain shape, and I want to develop this. I want to, you know, have a certain fit in my clothing and a profile, and I don't want, you know, I don't want to have words like flat or saggy. You know, I want this full and round profile. Yep. Operation Booty Jack does that. Then there's the third and final group. It's the person who doesn't know that they're going through life buttock deficient, or shall I say half arsed. And, you know, we don't want that for anyone. So we, you know, this thing is easy. It shows you how to do it. And, you know, you can solve your posterior problems.
Wow. Wow. I mean, John, you really got me there. So this could be illuminating. Someone could sort of self-diagnosed and they didn't even know that they had a deficient caboose region until Operation Booty Jack is sort of laid out before them.
Yeah, I mean, we know that that's the most powerful area of the body. It's the home of the rump roast and round steak, you know, at least at the butcher shop.
Sure.
We're not talking about cannibalism here, but yeah, I mean, we really need that. In fact, you know, you feel the rhythm with your hands. Steal the rhythm. Wow, you can. So, hey, guys, grab summer and celebrate it. Thanks for being with us today. Review, rate, like, share, subscribe, and you are awesome.
Adios.